You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to our look back at the fourth day's play at Old Trafford, which thankfully was uninterrupted by the weather. So it's back to the elite level of the game now after our dip into the club scene yesterday. And it has actually been a compelling day's cricket, which England finished up leading the West Indies by 219 runs with 8 second innings wickets in hand. So definitely the possibility of a result on the fifth day. And, you know, it's beautifully set up, actually. After a bit of a slow start, the day really built momentum and it was full of intriguing cricket, actually, Simon.
Well, the first half of the day belonged to the West Indies and the second half of the day emphatically belonged to England. I have to say, I always thought that even if West Indies saved the follow-on, England still had a chance of victory as long as West Indies' first innings was restricted. Obviously, they got 350, something like that, 380, then it would be incredibly difficult for England to win the match. But even a score of just over 270 and England batting again still gave them the opportunity to win the match. And they showed real positive intent by sending Stokes and Butler out after they bowled the West Indies out for 287. They didn't score as quickly as they would have liked by the close, but there's a real intent there. They scored 4.5 runs per over with the possibility of really going for it on the fifth morning, and, you know, giving West Indies something like, well, we could discuss it, really. I mean, the big issue is, can England have two new balls? Can they declare far enough ahead that if they do need that second new ball to perhaps finish off the West Indies tail, you know, at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, you know, can they make that equation happen?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. And in fact, I heard Stuart Broad's interview after the game, and he was talking about that as well. And clearly, the advantage of that new ball is quite big on this pitch. It does go a bit soft after about 40 overs, the ball, and you know, it's a little bit easier if you, especially if you're a top order batsman, it's probably a bit easier to stay in. So they do need that second new ball, which means if you work back, what is it, 98 overs possible on the final day? So really, England can only afford to bat for, say, 10 overs and then declare there's 2 overs off for the innings break, which will then leave 86 overs for the West Indies to bat. So it means England could, if they do it like that, claim a second new ball if needed at 80 overs and have 6 overs with it. And that was kind of what they had today. Well, a few more than 6, but it was clear that the impact of that second new ball, especially against the lower order, and just the pitch starting to play a few little tricks, Stuart Broad getting one or two bits of uneven bounce, and there's a little bit of movement as well. So, yeah, clearly. I suppose also, you know, the balls haven't swung that much, have they, in this test match? So, in a way, you're relying on that hardness. It's all right. It's all very well to kind of try and keep it shined and so on. But without the ability to use saliva, you don't quite get that polish, perhaps sustained, that you can normally. You know, the balls, these Duke's balls, haven't moved like they do in English summers over the last couple of years. And so batting has been a bit more comfortable. So it's the hardness of that new ball, actually, both for seamers and spinners, because Dominic Best got more grip and bounce with a newer ball than he did later on. So it's going to be, it is, I think, going to be crucial for England to be able to declare with the opportunity of taking two new balls.
So 10 overs in the morning, looking to score at, say, 8 and over, more if you can. That's 80 runs. That gives them a lead of 300, thereabouts.
Plenty.
Will they pull out 300 ahead?
Oh, I mean, they've got to. And in a funny sort of way, I think it's better if they don't score too many, because I think you always want to keep the opposition interested. I know that's probably an old-fashioned view, and it probably stems from my days of club cricket and also playing, actually, for Middlesex with some enterprising captains as well, where we like to tease the opposition and keep them interested, keep them giving them a sniff. You know, the more modern approach to captaincy, especially at test level, is completely shut a team out of the game, give them absolutely nothing. But I think in this case, England almost have to be just dangle a little bit of a carrot. You could get 300 on the final day in 86 overs, but you probably won't, in fact, in reality. I think better that way than just batting on a bit too long and in the end probably denying anyone the chance of winning.
Yeah, of course, England have declared against West Indies before and left them 320 on the final day and a little bit more than the final day at Headingley. And West Indies knocked them off no trouble at all with Shea Hope
that's right,
making
Headingley,
100.
Yeah,
so Root has declared before against the West Indies and lost. I don't know whether that will be in his mind. But, I mean, what was great is, I was sort of talking in the box sort of off air, I was talking with Tuffers and we were discussing, you know, whether England would change their batting order. And I sort of thought, I reckon sort of this innate caution, they probably won't. They'll sort of look to bat the last half and I just see what they can get with Sibley and Burns. But, you know, it was fantastic to see Butler and Stokes walking down the steps. And, you know, a real challenge to the West Indies. We're coming after you. Of course, they have to win the game to give themselves a chance of winning the series. But, you know, we're coming after you. And it sends a real message. And Stokes was hitting it sweetly. West Indies had so many fielders back on the boundary. But that actually does give you the opportunity to run ones and twos, get the occasional four. You know, like a one-day game, you can still score, you know, 8 and over. Can England get that rate up to, say, 10 and over tomorrow morning and score those 80 runs probably they're looking for? Alistair Cook, I said, what would you do if you were England captain? And he said, I'd want 280. So, you know, perhaps, you know, scoring at 8 and over for 8 overs, say, give them a few more overs. But, I mean, in a sense, you're right. The carrot is there for West Indies, should they, you know, choose to accept it. You know, the chance of glory, really, to knock them off. And we talked about Headingley, of course. You go back to 1984 when, can you remember that? And
yeah,
David Gower was sort of pilloried for not declaring and England accepting the light on the fourth day. And come on, declare. And of course, he did declare up past 11. West Indies knocked them all off. And they were shaking hands about, you know, 5 o'clock.
And then knocked them off for one as well. I really can't see the West Indies chasing 280, especially with this batting order. I mean, that was a pretty immense West Indies batting order in that era, 1984. And, you know, this one isn't the same. The pitch, I think, also isn't easy. It's a little tricky. Bowlers are much cleverer now at kind of one-day tactics and so on. So, you know, I can't see that 280 being chased. I'm going to stake my house, which has actually declined quite a bit in value over the last few months, but I'll stake my house that they won't get 280 to win if England set them that. They might get a bit less than that if England happen to, you know, lose a few wickets and declare earlier, which I'm sure they won't. You know, I think you could get 250 probably on that pitch, but I reckon 280 would be too much. So, you know, an intriguing challenge for Joe Root. Actually, I felt that England just tried to hit the ball a bit too hard in that last little session. Sometimes you just need a little bit of time to get in. And also, you know, you think of it, well, we've done this in white ball cricket, but a white ball doesn't do anything and it just flies nicely onto the middle of the bat, whereas the red ball, especially the Duke, does just misbehave itself a little bit, especially when it's new and hard, and it's just not as easy, as Joss Butler have found, as also Zach Crawley found, to just take it on without just having a few sighters first. What about, I suppose, the man of the day, the man who was left out for the first test and was no doubt champing at the bit to get out there, a typical Stuart Broad performance where he bowled well throughout the day, but there was that sort of surging intensity about his bowling after tea, which really changed the game.
Yeah, with the new ball, that was what it was. He had the new ball in his hand and it hadn't come off for him up until that point. Figures around about 0-60. Suddenly got a wicket, and we've seen this so often for Stuart Broad. You know, one brings two, brings three. Sometimes it brings four and five. I think the worry for the West Indies was how he got Jermaine Blackwood, with one that was on the stumps and kept very low, and he was out for naught. Amazing, isn't it, what difference a week makes? This time last week, Blackwood was winning the Test match for the West Indies. This time, he was, you know, getting castled by one that crept along the ground. The vicissitudes of cricket, the up and then the down. I think that was the dismissal that really must put doubts in West Indian minds, because there's nothing you can do about that. You know, you bowl it straight and it does that. There's absolutely almost nothing you can do as a batsman. You might occasionally get an inside edge onto the pad, but it's likely to get you LBW or knock your stumps over. And if there are a few balls like that on the final day, then, you know, big trouble for West Indies. There were also balls from Stuart Broad with the new ball that bounced a bit as well. So there's, you know, it is a bit uneven. As for spin, I mean, there is spin there. I'm not sure that Dominic Bess had the best day with ball in hand. 21 overs, 1-67. He got the night watchman out with in his first over of the day. But after that, I mean, probably bowled a bit too full, a bit too short. It didn't come for him. But, you know, with runs in the bank on the final day, perhaps he's able to settle and get into his work. Well, in South Africa, of course, picked up wickets there. But, you know, there's going to be some focus on Dominic Bess on the final day, especially with another Test match coming up, and West Indies with all these right-handers. You know, do actually England need a slow left-armer to cause problems and take the ball away from the right-hander, and or just get it onto that front pad? You know, just straighten one to the right-hander. You know, that might be an option.
There's a few good points there. I think as far as Bess is concerned, he wasn't quite at his best. He hasn't, of course, bowled much, and, you know, that's understandable that you're just having a little bit of trouble with your rhythm. His length was a bit variable. He bowled some good balls. He nearly clean bowled Shai Hope through the gate, but the ball bounced over the stumps. But generally, he didn't quite hit that sort of routine line and length, which really asked intense questions. I felt, actually, that he didn't bowl at the opposite end to Sam Curran enough to try and exploit the rough that, of course, Curran could produce. Or has produced. So, you know, if they get to work together in the second innings, it needs to be Curran from one end and then Bess bowling into his rough from the other end. Broad, interesting. Actually, you know, any of us who've ever sort of written him off, and I'm sure we all have made that mistake at times, he bowled an 88-mile-an-hour delivery today, and he was sustaining sort of 85, 86 after tea, having already bowled probably 12 overs in the day. And, you know, I just listened to his interview after the game, as I said, and he said he really got his rhythm up, having been a little bit tentative early on because he hadn't played a proper competitive match since January. He really got his rhythm up from bowling that spell round the wicket mid-afternoon, where both he and Stokes used that round-the-wicket ploy, bouncer ploy, in at the ribs. And, you know, I certainly remember, actually, that it one of the things that does, it's a few things, actually, going round the wicket as a right-armer and being aggressive like they were. Firstly, you land on a bit of the crease which hasn't been used that much because it's around the wicket spot. So you get a bit better purchase than you would when you're landing in holes of other bowlers bowling over the wicket. Secondly, you're banging the ball onto a fresh bit of the pitch which hasn't been used that much because you're coming from that different angle. And also, because you're attempting to bowl those, you know, sort of rib ticklers all the time, you do actually put a little bit more into your run-up and into your whole delivery. And that actually got Broad going. And he said then, he really, after tea with the new ball, he really cantered to the wicket. I think he was running in 1.5 kilometres an hour faster than he was before tea. And that just got those, you know, the knees up and the familiar Broad kind of, you know, kind of blazing a trail to the stumps and knocking batsmen over as a result.
And the other thing as well, maybe a minor thing, we'll wait and see on the final day, is bowling round the wicket is creating some rough, potentially, for Dom Best to bowl into on the final day. Broad and Stokes bowled round the wicket. I mean, Stokes is remarkable, really. In the morning session, he didn't bowl. And, you know, he hasn't bowled that much for England of late. And there's, you know, has he got a knee problem and, you know, all that. You know, there has been an issue for him, or despite the fact that over lockdown, you know, there was a chance to recuperate. And then, you know, the question went out to the media manager, you know, is Stokes fit to bowl? Yes. And then, of course, he comes back and bowls 11 overs in a row in the afternoon session. Is he fit to bowl? You bet he's fit to bowl. And then, after tea, he starts bowling and he starts to hold his stomach or something. You think, well, he's got a, you know, he's got a pulled muscle in his stomach. You know, this is another calamity in the offing. Goes off the field, and we find out he's got indigestion from what he ate at tea, and had a Rennie or something like that. And he was back on the field, and then of course batting towards the end and trying to take England up to a challenging total to set West Indies on the final day. But you know, remarkable to come in and bowl 11 overs in a row.
I mean, he's bionic. He's amazing, isn't it?
It is remarkable. I mean, you know, not many bowlers bowl that length of spell. And you know, and we thought, well, why is he not bowling in the morning? Actually, you could sort of understand why he wasn't bowling in the morning, because you think Wokes and Broad opening up, there's some spin in the pitch, so you want to see quite a lot of Best, and then there's Curran as well. So in a way, there weren't many windows for him to bowl necessarily. There's probably one when they brought Wokes back from the Jimmy Anderson end. But, you know, it wasn't a given, really, for Joe Root as a captain. He had to bowl him because there were other quite good options at the time. But, you know, he needed them in the afternoon. And he made that vital breakthrough as well. He got rid of Brathwaite, caught and bowled at 199. And it sort of helped England on the way. I thought Brathwaite played really well today. He looked a decent. England just never looked like getting him out. And then Stokes surprised him. He went to turn it on the leg. So I got leading edge and caught and bowled. And that perhaps was the key wicket of the day. Although the Blackwood wicket will have West Indies sleeping uneasily tonight. I think the shooter that castled him.
I really liked the way that Sam Curran bowled. I like the way that he bowls generally. I like the way that he really sort of speculates for wickets by pitching it up, trying to hit the stumps, trying to hit the pads. If that doesn't work, he bowls little cutters. He goes round the wicket and tries to spear it in at the stumps. He bowled to Alzari Joseph after nearly pinning him LBW, bowled a couple of bouncers at him, which he took top-edged or gloved over the keeper's head. He's got lots of little tricks up his sleeve, and he makes the most of that fairly short stature and actually modest pace, but he's at you all the time. And, you know, the odd ball goes for four, half volley, whatever. But I think his little bag of tricks will be valuable tomorrow if the pitch starts to go underground a bit. And you do find, actually, on the fifth day at Old Trafford, it gets a bit abrasive. There might be a bit of reverse. And Curran will be great going round the wicket, sort of a bit like I suppose a poor man's Wasim Akram is a bit unfair. But, I mean, Wasim Akram was so good at doing that everybody's going to be a poor man's Wasim Akram. But, you know, Curran is a clever bowler. I wish he could find just another 2 or 3 miles an hour of pace. But, you know, he's got something there. And I think that'll be really valuable tomorrow as well, because he won't give up. He's just got that, you know, really aggressive streak and optimism as well, which you definitely need as a bowler.
He's played 17 matches for England before this one, and he's played in 12 victories. You know, there's something about him. He brings something to the game with bat or ball. Now, the other issue tomorrow, 98 overs, and we play them all as well, as long as the light holds. Now, it's coming up to 8:25 in the evening, and I'm looking out my window, and it is sunny. And so, you know, if we need to go on until 7:30, 7:45, tomorrow, you know, we could do, depending on how quickly England bowl the overs. So as long as there's sun around tomorrow and the forecast is pretty good, then we should get all 98 overs in. We didn't get a full day today. I think we lost 4 overs at the end because of a slow over rate.
There's no greenhouses nearby, are there? Because it was at Old Trafford, wasn't it, where sun was glinting off a greenhouse or some glass roof late at night one day. And, you know, having not played much because of bad light during the day, when the sun comes out at 7 o'clock at night and glints off the glass, Dickie Bird took them off because the batsmen were being blinded by sunlight at 7 o'clock at night. So no greenhouses in sight, are there?
Not that I can see. I think that happened at Derby once as well, didn't it? They came off for too much sun. Only in England can you come off for too much sun. But it does look, though, as if, despite the loss of that third day, miserable day yesterday, it really was. I mean, we're hearing stories of, you know, 28 degrees sunny in the south.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was absolutely magnificent. When I was in Bushy Park, you can listen back to the podcast I did yesterday with some chairman from Bushy Park. And that's what we're going to finish with tonight, actually, is we're just going to replay what William Frewin talked about, the chairman of Teddington for 17 years. What he talked about gives chairman of cricket club sleepless nights.
Deer getting caught in a net, that is the no-no. The Royal Parks don't mind basically what we do, but if a deer gets caught in the nets, we are in deep, deep, deep trouble.
Okay, so that was William Frewin and the deer getting caught up in the nets, giving club chairman worries overnight. So what we want from you is any stories from club cricket, or indeed professional cricket if you want, of the kind of things that give you sleepless nights, worrying about stuff. Can you come up with any other unusual circumstances which are the kind of things that give you nightmares before you turn up to the club on a Saturday morning? If you could send those in to simon.hughes@thecricketer.com, simon.hughes@thecricketer.com. We'll read those out over the next couple of days if you've got some good stories from club cricket about things that give you absolute palpitations before you turn up to the club.
Well, the one that springs to mind is what happened in 1975 at Headingley, of course, with the George Davis is innocent protest, where, you know, people got in and put oil on the pitch that was going to be used the final day of the England-Australia match, and they had to call the game off. Although, as it turned out, rain would have ruined that, what would have been a thrilling final day in any case. But, you know, I suppose it's those sorts of things for international cricket.
Yeah, actually, I remember Jonathan Agnew telling the story once about the roller at Grace Road, which had a starting handle on the front, and it was a bit of a wet day and a wet pitch. They needed to get the heavy roller out, and the starting handle fell off early on in the rolling process and got rolled accidentally into the pitch. So they had to dig it out. Imagine that. So, you know, you must have some brilliant stories from club cricket about that. And by the way, it was just great to see club cricket thriving yesterday in Teddington. There were three matches I watched simultaneously, and there were some, you know, some brilliant moments in all of them. It was nice to see, actually, a couple of first-class players playing as well. Sam Robson and Nick Gubbins, both playing for Teddington, having their first hit of the summer, and enjoying it, both getting 40, being outshone by an Australian who isn't even a professional, who got 130. But it was just great to see, and crowd, decent crowd around the boundary as well, just enjoying the scene. So I'm sorry that the weather didn't manage to make it up north, but it was magnificent in the south.
Yeah, I was going to say, lucky for you, all we saw yesterday was the rain falling on the Old Trafford covers while hearing tales of people sunbathing and enjoying their cricket in the south. But, you know, we've had an excellent day today. It really has been an excellent day's cricket, and it promises to be fascinating tomorrow. There's so much for West Indies to play for. If they draw this match, they will retain the Wisden Trophy and give themselves a chance of winning a series in England for the first time, amazingly really, since 1988. But I think England are definitely a chance tomorrow. I think they can win this match tomorrow. And so there's a real challenge ahead for West Indies.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope you are too. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back with you at this time tomorrow.
Podcast Network.